We're going to be doing a lesson on being honest and putting away all deceits. And I won't reread what Paul read in Ephesians 4, but if you want to turn back there, I do want to point out some things about that text that just emphasize why this is something that is so important to talk about and to really dig deep into. And I'm going to say some things that are similar to a lesson I taught a couple months ago on handling anger, the way Jesus teaches us to navigate anger. So in Ephesians 4, 17 through 24, Paul the Apostle is kind of outlining where we've come from and who Christ has not only made us to be, but who Christ has made us to become. And so you kind of look at who we once were in verse 17 and be thinking, what's more familiar to where we were? Truth or deceit? So verse 17 describes the futility of the mind or understanding, being darkened in their mind, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that's in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And you'll notice in verse 22, the former self, the old man, that was being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit. So if there's something that we all have in common, we all have a commonality in where we've come from. We've all come from a place of being deceived, of believing a lie, believing lies, right? And just like anger, truth and dishonesty is something talked a lot about in Scripture, and that's because it's always relevant, right? We live in a culture that is saturated with deceptiveness, a culture that does not honor truth the way that God desires for it to be honored. And if you'll notice in verse 24, the kind of people that we've been made to be are people of truth, right? So verse 25, I think it's significant that of all the things he could say after bringing up this amazing work that Christ has done to take us from who we were to who we are now and who we are called to be, the first application he makes is, okay, so you've come from being deceived, and truth is in Jesus. And you've been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. So put away falsehood and speak truth with the people around you, right? So I think we all know that, you know, lying is sinful and that we need to speak truth. So the goal of this lesson is to simply reinforce that, but it's also to build on that and build a deeper conviction in that and kind of think about more of the subtleties of deception that I think we have to be really careful about. And some of the dangers that are involved in areas of dishonesty that we can easily overlook and be negligent of. So verse 25, I think, gives us a framework. We are to be a people of truth. We need to be committed to the truth. We need to be a people where we have no tolerance for deception in our own lives and especially for our families. But again, the practice of what that looks like is something we have to work on. So like I said in my sermon on anger when we were thinking about that really practically, I mentioned that struggling with anger doesn't make you like some kind of freak or some kind of failure as a Christian. You know, anger is something we all struggle with. And I mentioned if you don't struggle with anger, you're either not a human being or don't have close enough relationships where that becomes a struggle, or you're just not having the kind of conversations that might instigate temptations of anger, which oftentimes are very necessary conversations to have anyway. And I think it's the same thing with struggling with lying and with being tempted to be deceptive in small ways or struggling with being as honest as we need to be. If that's a struggle you have, Ephesians 4, 17 through 24 clearly portrays that doesn't make you some kind of freak. We're all going to struggle with dishonesty. And I think the reality is the more we interact with people, the more we're in the world, really the temptation to be dishonest is very prevalent and very common. And so I think these are things that just really need to be reinforced, and we really need to be thinking about these things very seriously. So I want to start with how Jesus exposes kind of the bigger issues of deceit, right? I think people who don't care about the gospel and don't know God can have convictions about lying and dishonesty. But Jesus takes all of that so much further, as he does with anything that anyone in the world can perceive to be a wrong thing or a bad thing. Jesus digs so much deeper into why that's wrong, and so much deeper into the depths of how much of that do we need to really be putting away and uprooting. So turn to John chapter 8, and this is going to be the framework for some just very practical things about lying, deception, honesty, and truth. John chapter 8, verse 34 through 47. And again, this is kind of going to be a framework for some very practical points about the realities of dishonesty that Jesus exposes here. So John 8, Jesus is talking with a Jewish audience here, and he just got done encouraging them that they need to continue to abide in his word. Because if they continue to abide in his word, then they'll truly be his disciples. In verse 32, then they'll know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Well, that upsets them, because in verse 33, you know, this idea of you will be free, well, we're already free. So Jesus responds to this in verse 34. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is the slave of sin. And the slave does not remain in the house forever. The son does remain forever. So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's seed," which is what they just affirmed to him, right? "Yet you are seeking to kill me, because my word has no place in you. I speak the things which I have seen with my father. Therefore, you also do the things which you have heard from your father." They answered and said to him, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you are Abraham's children, you would do the deeds of Abraham. But now you are seeking to kill me." And note, this is the second time he affirms that to them, which they don't acknowledge. At the end of the chapter, they actually do try to stone him to death. "A man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God, this Abraham did not do. You are doing the deeds of your father." They said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, God." Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and have come from God. For I have not even come of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I am saying? It is because you cannot hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I speak the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I speak the truth, why do you not believe me? He who is of God hears the words of God. For this reason, you do not hear them, because you are not of God." All right. Something to think about here really quick, kind of as we get into this. Jesus is telling the truth, right? Jesus is being honest, and he's trying to encourage the audience to also be honest with where they are and who they are, right? So I want you to think about this. One of the fundamental struggles, I think, with truth and honesty or deceptiveness is oftentimes telling the truth makes me look bad. At least when it matters the most, right? When it's kind of the greatest temptation to lie or be deceptive, it's oftentimes because I don't want to look bad. I don't want to create tension. I don't want to cause trouble, right? Do you get the impression here that Jesus is afraid of looking bad by telling the truth? Do you get the impression that Jesus is afraid of creating tension in a relationship to tell the truth or to be honest? Or to draw up a need for the other party to be honest? Is Jesus afraid of hurting them? Is he afraid of upsetting them to tell the truth? And I would say no, right? So again, I think there's just a lot here to think about practically, that the more we're like Jesus, the more we're willing to tell the truth and be honest, no matter the trouble that may bring, no matter the hurt that may cause, no matter the difficulty that might come on, no matter how bad I might look in the process. And just something really fundamental here, Jesus demonstrates a very important difference, that honesty is of God's nature. Hebrews chapter 6 says something really important. So Paul led a song dealing with standing on the promises, just really finding refuge in the Lord and in the certainty of what he says. And Hebrews 6 is making that point and says, that we can take refuge in the Lord's promises because it is impossible for him to lie. God always tells the truth. Honesty is of God's nature. And what does Jesus say in verse 44? Who is the father of lies? You know, do you think if we understood that when we're dishonest, we're actually standing with Satan and supporting Satan? Do you think that would maybe be more convicting when we think about kind of the crossroads of telling the truth or being deceptive? And what this implies is that any struggle of honesty is a struggle of standing with God or standing with the devil. And that's just the black and white reality, right? And that we have to see that truth and honesty is always taking Jesus' side. Being deceptive and dishonest, we can be very blind to the fact that when I choose to be deceptive or dishonest, I am actually in support of the devil and taking his side, right? So the temptation between honesty and deception is always a path between choosing the Lord or choosing the devil. And you notice what this is connected to when Jesus says, you want to do the desires of your devil, of your father in verse 44, the devil. I think if we can work out that lying is of the devil's nature, he's the father of lies, then if I have habits of unchecked dishonesty, what does that do in my spiritual life? What is that going to make it easier for me to do in terms of sin? Because if the heart of all sin is deception, and if kind of the heart of any sin is being deceived and not seeing things as they really are, then if I have habits of unchecked dishonesty, or if in my life I have some form of tolerance for dishonesty in myself, what that means is it's going to be much easier then to sin in other ways in my life, right? So honesty then is most important when it threatens you. Do you think that the people that Jesus was talking to felt threatened by his words? I want you to think about this, though. So Jesus says twice, you are seeking to kill me, right? If somebody said to you, and you weren't necessarily thinking that was the case, you are trying to kill me, it'd be a pretty threatening accusation, right? So I want you to think, is Jesus an accuser or is he an advocate? Is Jesus a person that condemns or a person that justifies? So look, I don't doubt that they felt threatened by what Jesus was saying, but was Jesus only trying to accuse them, right? Like, was Jesus trying to beat them up with this accusation that they're trying to kill them? Or was Jesus telling them the truth so that they could get out of that mentality, so that they could confront it, deal with it, and repent of it, right? Were they doing themselves any favors by rejecting what Jesus is saying? And again, you can turn to the end of the chapter. I think as this conversation started, they may have been in denial about what Jesus is saying, but look at verse 59. All Jesus had to do was press them further, and look at verse 59. At the end of this, therefore, they picked up stones to throw at him. And that's not stones to throw at him as in wanting to injure him. That is, they all wanted to kill Jesus together on the spot. So was he right? And again, was Jesus just trying to accuse them, or was he trying to actually help them by trying to help them deal with reality? One of the most important things about honesty and dishonesty is this. We can't control reality. And a part of lying and deceiving is I'm taking control of someone else's reality. I'm trying to manipulate what you believe to be true. Does God do that to us? Does God try to like manipulate our view of reality and distort our sense of reality? Or does God give us the respect that even when it's hard, even when it's unpleasant, even when it's upsetting, that it is critical that we learn to deal with reality? So honesty, again, is most important when it threatens me, right? Because, again, that's reality. The truth is an inescapable reality. The truth involves accountability. And just like honesty, accountability is also most important when it's inconvenient, when it's difficult, when it threatens me. And dishonesty is ultimately an avoidance or a rejection of accountability. So again, when is honesty most important? Not when it's easy, not when it makes sense. Being honest and telling the truth is most important when I feel threatened by the truth. So that leads into this. What Jesus was saying was very convicting. But was that good? Like, did they need to be convicted in order to properly change? I would argue yes, right? So being honest and dealing with reality, it builds conviction. And that's not to be avoided, right? We need to deal with reality even when it's difficult, when it's unpleasant, when it's unexpected. Honesty builds godly convictions, and it requires courage. You know, I would argue that it would take courage for them to accept what Jesus is saying, because the temptation is avoid and run away. Is it courageous to avoid and run away with inevitable difficult things? Is it courageous to run away from something that is difficult but unavoidable? So here's the thing about dishonesty then. Dishonesty just destroys the conscience. And I'm not just talking about like some grand lie. Even like subtle, intimate things we might do and we might say that, you know, we can easily convince ourselves, like it's not some big, impactful lie. Just any form of dishonesty, when we begin to have unchecked dishonesty in our life, when we don't hate lying, what that does is it destroys the conscience and begins affecting other areas of my spiritual life, and it cultivates a cowardly character. If you want a character that can't deal with hard things, tolerate dishonesty in your life. Because honesty equips us, and what I mean is like difficult honesty, right? That equips you to deal with things that are inconvenient, but they're real. Difficult things that take work to sort through, things that interrupt me, but are inevitable. A cowardly person cannot deal with unexpected difficulties. They can't deal with things that are overwhelming, things that I wish I could just get away from or avoid. The gospel equips us to deal with reality. And a form of love and respect that God gives us is he tries to help us deal with reality, right? And then finally here, dishonesty cultivates hostility towards Jesus. There was an honest way to respond to what Jesus was saying. And it's not the way they were responding here. But if they would have responded honestly, they would have accepted his words and repented. But that's not what happened. And I think this, again, this exposes a critical reality to dishonesty. When we tolerate dishonesty in our life, when we don't hate being deceptive, when we don't repent of things we say or do that are misrepresentations of what is true, that cultivates hostility towards Jesus. And what that means is it's going to be a lot more difficult to find Jesus to be a comforting person to us. It's going to be a lot more difficult to believe in Jesus' promises when it matters the most. It's going to be really difficult when I feel convicted to run to the Lord for mercy and to understand the certainty of his grace and forgiveness because there's unchecked dishonesty, right? So there's a lot that goes into this idea that dishonesty cultivates hostility towards Jesus. And again, Jesus says, "You cannot hear my word," in verse 43. Do you want to weaken your ability to believe the truth? Do you want to make it harder to really have a grounded confidence in what God says? Do you want to make that more difficult for yourself? Then don't be deceived by believing that lying is a solution to any problem. That being dishonest is better in some intimate conversation or situation that you're facing. Because the reality is unchecked dishonesty diminishes your ability to properly believe in the Lord's words. The two are incompatible with each other. All right. So I want to go to Acts chapter 5, and I want to kind of fill this out more. So that lays some groundwork fundamentally in how Jesus exposes a lot more about the problem of dishonesty than what can be understood outside of the gospel. But I want to look at Acts 5, and I want to use Acts 5 as a framework and as an illustration for some proverbs that deal with honesty and dishonesty. So go to Acts 5, 1 through 11. This is dealing with Ananias and Sapphira. that when the church was beginning and there was all this momentum with the spread of Christianity, there were people like Barnabas who were selling property and bringing the value of that property to the apostles to be distributed to needy Christians in Jerusalem. Well, as a result of this, in Acts chapter 5, you have Ananias, Acts chapter 5, verse 1. But a man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property and kept back some of the price for himself with his wife's full knowledge. And bringing a portion of it, he laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back some of the price of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your authority? Why is it that you have laid this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. And as he heard these words, Ananias fell down and breathed his last, and great fear came over all who heard. And the young men rose up and wrapped him up, and after carrying him out, they buried him. Now there was an interval of about 3 hours, and his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. Peter responded to her, tell me, whether you paid this much for the land? And she said, yes, that much. Then Peter said to her, why is it that you have agreed together to put the Spirit of the Lord to the test? Behold, the feet of those who buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out as well. And immediately she fell at his feet and breathed her last. And the young men came in and found her dead, and they carried her out and buried her beside her husband. And great fear came over the whole church and over all those who heard these things. Wow. Did God overreact here? Or is lying just extremely deceptive and we struggle to understand the seriousness of it? So I'll ask again. Did God overreact to what happened here? Because think about it. They sold a piece of property and they gave a lot of the money, probably most of that money, to the apostles. And what was the nature of their lie? It was withholding truth for selfish benefit, right? Like, it seems like they, for one, wanted that money, but maybe wanted also to look really righteous, like people like Barnabas, and kind of take some admiration that they saw others were getting for being so generous, right? So it can be dishonest to withhold information that really needs to be divulged in a given situation. Not that you're just telling an outright lie, but you're not telling the whole truth, right? So again, I would argue God did not overreact here. And kind of another thing before we get into the Proverbs, think about John chapter 8 and Jesus saying that Satan is the father of lies. Look at verse 3. Who is behind this? You know, if you heard someone lie and you found out about it, would you think, like, Satan filled that person's heart to do that? You know, Satan is the father of lies. And what Ananias did here was a crossroads between taking Jesus' side and supporting the devil. And obviously, he chose the wrong side. And then look at verse 4, the end of verse 4. You know, there may be lies we tell where people literally never find out about it. Like, we might not be in that kind of famous comical situation, you know, where you tell one lie and then you have to tell another lie and another lie, and you just have to go on this endless journey of lying to keep covering up your initial lie. Some people who are good at lying, they tell one lie and they're never questioned and it just gets dropped. A part of my past, so when I was younger, I trained myself to lie effectively. And that was something that I had to repent of and do a lot of work to get out of, right? Because it's not the case that with every lie, you're going to have to keep lying to cover it up and it's just going to chase you around. There are times where if you're really good at it, you're going to get away with it. But look at verse 4. Who did they really lie to? Did you know that you never get away with being dishonest? And did you know that God always takes lying personally? And again, thinking about John 8 and kind of the difference between the reality of dishonesty and the reality of truth, how convicting should that be? Like, how convicting should we allow that to be, right? So what God was doing here is showing you should have a conscience that is convicted by deceptiveness. And do you think God did this because this only affected Ananias and Sapphira alone? Or do you think from God's perspective, He saw that there would be more damage done by this lying going unchecked. So this will be the basis for illustrating some Proverbs. So turn to Proverbs chapter 12, verse 19. And we'll just kind of briefly look at some Proverbs to kind of keep building on these ideas and then make some practical points to finish the lesson. But look at Proverbs 12, 19. Proverbs 12, 19. It says, truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment. So here's a question with what I have on the board, that dishonesty cultivates a foolish perspective. Does wisdom only make decisions because of what is immediately going to happen? Like, is wisdom short-sighted? Or does wisdom see the bigger picture? Is wisdom looking for short-term benefit? Or does wisdom look at the broader outcome of things? You want to be a fool? Tolerate dishonesty. Because a lying tongue is only for a moment. Again, think about Ananias. How long did his lie really last? How long did that benefit last? I'm sure they maybe had some joy over what they had done, the money they were able to keep secretly. But what God clearly demonstrated is this proverb is true. A lying tongue is only for a moment. Did you know that dishonesty actually never solves a problem? Like, the worst thing that can happen is you lie and you get away with it and your conscience becomes seared by that. The best thing that can happen is you lie and it's found out and you're convicted by it, right? Wisdom considers the hidden cost of decisions. A foolish person is only looking for immediate safety, immediate benefit, immediate reward. There are consequences in the gospel for our decisions that are not visible, that are not immediately apparent. And so I want you to think about this illustration. Is it wise to max out a credit card thinking you're never going to have to pay that money back? No, you would think that's foolish to treat a credit card like that's your money, right? That's basically just taking out a loan that's going to have interest. Anyway, you get the idea, right? We never get away with lying. It doesn't solve any problems. It just puts things off and it pretends like you've escaped consequences when really they're still lingering. Think about Proverbs 20, verse 17. Proverbs 20, verse 17. Now, your translation might use a slightly different way of saying this, but Proverbs 20, verse 17 says, bread obtained by lying, your translation might say fraud or by a lie, is sweet to a man. So there you go. What you get out of lying, delicious. But wait a minute. But afterward, his mouth will be filled with gravel. You know, you imagine Ananias and Sapphira again. Felt like they got something pretty sweet. You know, they sold their property. They get to look really good. They get great admiration from the church. They got to participate in all the generosity happening. They got to keep probably a fairly large sum of money. But what did that turn into very quickly for them? Do you think in the afterlife they look back fondly on the decision that they made? You know, the gain of dishonesty is completely self-destructive. You know, think about bread being turned into gravel in your mouth. Think about it this way. I want you to imagine you're at a restaurant and you order your favorite food. The chef comes out and he's describing it to you, what's on the plate. It all sounds great, perfect. It's exactly what you want. Then at the end, he says, we even threw in some E. coli. Eventually, you're like, wait, what? So yeah, I mean, you'll get food poisoning, but this is the dish. It's exactly what you want. Would you eat the food knowing that after you eat it, you're going to spend at least the rest of the day in agony throwing everything up? Is that going to change the way that you approach that meal? And think, what if they tell you, but it's going to taste really good? You know, it's exactly what you want. No, you know, that doesn't make sense. But that's dishonesty, right? It's doing something foolish. It's gain that is so short-lived, and it's so self-destructive that it just completely overwhelms any perceived benefit we may think we're getting by not telling the truth or avoiding the truth. And then look at Proverbs 26, 19 through 20. Proverbs 26, 19 through 20. This has been a proverb that just has stuck with me for such a long time. Of the proverbs, this is one that when I think of interesting proverbs, this is one I tend to remember. Proverbs 26, 18, and 19. Like a madman who shoots firebrands, arrows, and death. Sounds pretty bad. So is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, "Am I not joking?" You know, verse 19, do you get the impression that the person is understanding or appreciating the illustration in verse 18? So, in 2020, a lot of things that happened, right? One of the things that happened in America, though, was California had an incredible wildfire that started from someone having a gender reveal party where they had it was something that produced smoke, but it was a scorching day, very dry. It caused a spark that then turned into a fire, that turned into a wildfire, and a firefighter ended up dying. Did you know that last year that the couple who were responsible for that pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter? They didn't plead, it was just a gender reveal party. We didn't mean anything by it. That's just not going to fly, right? The reality is you did this thing that you shouldn't have done. You should have had some more sense about what you were doing and thought it through. And because of that, someone died and a lot of property was destroyed. Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5. Was God overreacting when he struck Ananias and Sapphira down? Or was God simply unveiling reality? And do you think God was just striking them down, or do you think he was demonstrating the impact that their lie was also going to have on others as well? You know, it's like verse 18, this is someone, it's like they're shooting arrows randomly in the air. They're throwing wood that's on fire all over the place. And then he says, it's just a joke. You know, would you respect someone who thinks that way? I think there's one application of this that in a part is just my own conviction, but I at least think it's helpful to bring up. A lot of entertainment circles around lying as a source of humor. The world produces a lot of comedic situations. Look, this is kind of my conviction from this passage. You don't have to follow my conviction, but I just want to bring this up. I've personally decided I don't want to be entertained by lying being treated as a joke, because I think we have to develop a deeper conviction than what we see in the world. And so verse 19, the person is saying, I meant this to be funny. This was supposed to be a funny thing. Verse 18 isn't describing a funny situation, right? So again, we have to deal with reality, that dishonesty in God's sight is consequential and destructive. The world will say, no, it's funny. No, it saves you. It's better for you in certain situations. And God says, no, it's always destructive. The problem is you don't see it. The last proverb we'll look at is the last verse of this chapter. Did you know that lying is an act of hatred? It says, a lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. You know, something I've struggled with is what's the difference between flattery and just being really encouraging? I think flattery is just complimenting someone in a way you don't really believe it, or complimenting someone way too far where it's because of their position or because you selfishly, you want something from them. You compliment them in a way you would never do it if it weren't for the fact that you want something from them, right? So the cliche, for husbands here, you know, your wife tries something on and says, you know, how does this make me look? You know, again, there's maybe some subtle temptation to say, oh, you look great, when, you know, maybe not. I would say that you just have to let your wife deal with reality. If it doesn't look good, I know this might get you in the doghouse. If you really believe it doesn't look good, tell her, you know, kindly, it doesn't. If your wife cooks a meal and you really don't like it, you can kindly work through, I would maybe not like for you to cook this again, right? There's kind ways to do that. But again, a flattering mouth works ruin. We just have to be really convicted about that stuff, or we don't want to tolerate dishonesty. I don't want you to think reality is something that it's really not. I want you to work through reality with me. The reality is, I don't like this food. The reality is, I don't think that looks as good on you as other things do. You get the idea, but back in verse 28, a lying tongue hates those it crushes. Who did Ananias get told he was really lying to? You have not lied to men, but to God. Isn't it convicting to think that lying is an act of hatred against God? And this is how dishonesty sears our conscience, right? That lying is not very convicting, or, oh, lying is an offense against God. Like, that's too much. Like, that's how dishonesty sears our conscience, is we don't take it seriously. We're just like the madman throwing off death everywhere and saying, no, it's not that big of a deal. That's crazy for you to act so seriously about this. To be dishonest is an act of hatred. That's why God acted so seriously against it. And so I want to end the lesson. I debated even including this, because I debated, like, we all know how to apply this if we think about it, but I do think it would be helpful to end the lesson just thinking about some very practical areas here. How can we apply honesty? How far should this go? You know, it's tax time. I'm sure most of you know that if you're a little dishonest on your tax forms, you can save sometimes a lot of money. And if you're a little dishonest, you can even get a lot of money back in your return that maybe you wouldn't have been able to get if you just would have been downright honest all the way through. So again, just something like taxes. You can be tempted to kind of fiddle with the truth a little bit because you can even say, I don't owe the government that money. You know, whatever. You can justify it, validate it. We need to be honest with that kind of thing, right? At work, sometimes being honest actually makes your job harder and doesn't make you a better employee. That was my experience with my previous job. Being honest meant it was going to take me longer to do a lot of things because other people would either skip things they were supposed to do to save time or just not do them. One of the things that I had to do as a manager is I had daily observations where I was supposed to watch my employees, critique how they do their job on a form, and then review it with them. You know what my other managers did? They either didn't do it, or they wrote down things and never reviewed it with their employees, or they would just hand it to the employee because actually talking about it would upset them, and I don't want to deal with that. Well, so what I would do, I would observe them, and I would walk through it and talk to them and ask them questions to make sure they understood and heard me. And for areas that I managed where the habit was different with the previous manager, do you know how the employees would react? Anger. So you know it's easy to be dishonest because I don't want to deal with my employees being upset with me. Everyone else did it this way. Again, there's so many things in a work environment where you can be tempted to be dishonest, even in ways other people don't see. But just remember, honesty is something God sees, right? So you just have to really commit to this. What about in marriage? You know, when does it matter the most to be honest? When being honest would upset my spouse. When being honest will hurt my spouse's feelings. Again, John 8. Was Jesus afraid to be honest when it would hurt someone's feelings? Or was Jesus willing to respect people enough where it's, here's the truth, I'm here for you, we can work through this, it's going to be hard, but this is the truth. In your marriage, the hard thing is being honest when it matters the most means you're going to upset your husband or your wife. You are going to hurt their feelings. But you have to think beyond the temporary. Honesty builds trust. Trust and a bond that cultivates joy and a capacity to properly communicate. If a couple has habits of dishonesty, you're going to have a really hard time working through really difficult things in your marriage, right? So honesty is rewarding beyond the short-term hurt produced by it, right? In parenting. And I'll just try to go through these things a little briefly here. But some quotes from other parents that one brother who's older said, I would go easy on confession and hard on deception with discipline. Kids learn to lie. Some kids lie better than others. Some kids struggle with lying more than other kids do. And I do think it's important Lying, when a child gets away with it, you've done something very wrong that now you feel good about doing. And so a parent has to enforce, you should feel bad for this, right? Confession, go discipline, right, is the point of that. Another brother said he in his household has done a lot of work to honor honesty, to show that being honest is honorable, that we honor honesty in this house. And he said his kids, as a result, try to be honest. Your kids will notice if honesty is not honored in your household. Your kids will notice if you take the easy way out and keep secrets that you shouldn't be keeping. If daddy keeps secrets from mommy, if mommy keeps secrets from daddy, and you know there's just not much honor being given to honesty in the household, your kids are going to notice that. Don't be surprised then if your kids grow up learning how to lie and lie effectively in ways you don't notice. With brethren, honesty oftentimes means exposing something humiliating or opening a can of worms. When is honesty most important in local church relationships? Well, it's when saying this is going to make me look really bad, or the brethren, they didn't know that I was struggling with this kind of embarrassing thing. That's when honesty is most important. You know, again, we can work through anything. The worst thing a person can do is keep sin secret in their life and try to struggle through it alone. And finally, in relationships, where it should be applied is when a lie has been left unresolved. Sapphira was given a golden opportunity. Peter said, "Did you sell the property for such and such a price?" I think God would have gone light on confession, but he had to go hard on deception because she said, "Yep, that was it." And she dropped dead too. She was given the opportunity to fess up to what she did, and I believe that would have been treated a lot differently, right? So here's why I'm bringing that up again, is sometimes a lie has been said that affects someone. And it may be someone close to me, maybe in my marriage. You and I have a responsibility, even if it's gone in the past, to fix those things and resolve them. You can't let those things linger in your relationship. So there's a time to go back, dig it up again, fix it. The Lord will be with you, right? Was Jesus trying to hurt them in John 8? Was he trying to condemn them and accuse them? No! Telling the truth feels threatening, but that's when it's most important, right? Jesus was trying to help them, not destroy them. So, last thing to consider on the other end of this is we need to reward confession, right? A lot of times when someone confesses something and isn't honest, it is hurtful. It's surprising. You know, it hurts our feelings or is upsetting, whatever. You can't prevent that. Like when someone confesses something difficult, it can be surprising, unexpected, and hurtful. But we have to be careful to honor someone's courage to be honest when we know they've struggled to tell that truth, right? We can communicate like, "Hey, that hurts a lot, but I love you, and I'm so thankful you told me that. I'm going to be hurt for a while, but I'm with you. And I want to work with you," right? So again, we also need to be careful to reward honesty, not just punish it and make someone feel like they shouldn't have told the truth because I've just totally lost it and I don't even want to work with them. I don't even want to encourage them. Be really careful about that, right? God comforts confession. He already knows the sin is there, so that kind of changes things a little bit. We have to work through being surprised, but we need to be like God and do the work of comforting confession when we can. All right. Thank you so much for your patience with going through that. I hope that kind of that very practical approach to honesty was helpful. If you're here and you need to bring something forward and fix a lie or confess something, we want to be helpful with each other. We need to be ready to work together and make honesty something that we are courageously pursuing together. So we'll pray about these things and then we'll sing the invitation.